Morning, everyone. Last night we took Dad out for his birthday party. Went out to Red Lobster. Watched him eat lobster. That's always interesting. He turns 92 on Tuesday. I was thinking about that. Mom turned 84 on February the 8th. I probably won't ever last that long. Okay, I'll wear off and be 5'4" before I get there. So, and I got to wondering why it is that we wait to say things that we wished we would have said. We wait to say them at a funeral. And so this morning I want to talk a little bit about the family and what it means to us and what parents mean to us. Family's under attack in the United States and has been for some time. We have a situation where in a lot of families, maybe more than you realize, the father comes home from work and slips in the back door. The wife is really busy with her own things and doesn't really care whether they got there or not. She doesn't rush to meet him at the door. She pretends he isn't there. He walks in. He finds his kids in the living room. Tries to say something to them, but they're too busy watching their television show, so they don't really know that he's there. And really the only person who pays any attention to him is Susie the dog, who is always very attentive and listening and caring that he's home. Right now we're in a political arena where lots and lots of things are being said. I talked in class a little bit this morning about politics. Not a lot. But that generation that I had downstairs in class looks at what's going on in politics now and says, that is disgusting and that is dirty and that is underhanded and they're right. Okay? But I think I mentioned the other day in class or somewhere that we didn't even scratch the surface of how dirty and underhanded and despicable it can get. Sometime go back and read the history of the campaign of Andrew Jackson and tell me that you've seen anything yet. But of all the candidates and what all they're talking about and all they're saying, there is a theme that comes up frequently that they're right about. I'm not sure they understand what they're talking about, but they're right about, and that is the essence, the basis, the foundation of a country is the family. Is the family. There's a very disturbing Grimm's fairy tale I wanted to read to you. Once there was a little old man whose moist eyes blinked more than they should have and whose hands trembled quite a bit. Since he had no place to live, he moved in with his son's family. Now the son's wife was not overly thrilled with this new arrangement, but she tolerated it. Then one day the old man's hands were shaking so much that the clinking of his silverware on the bowls and glasses was more than a wife could bear. So the next day, she got an earthenware bowl, placed it in the corner, put a chair there for him to eat. Said it's just not right to have to put up with this sort of thing. It's against the woman's right to happiness. For some time he ate out of his earthenware bowl in the corner, looking wistfully at the family sitting at the table. Then one particular day, his hands were shaking more than usual, and the bowl fell out of his lap onto the floor and broke, spilling all of his meal under her beautiful rug. That just does it, she said. If you're going to eat like a pig, we'll feed you like a pig. And she made a trough, put it down on the floor, and told him that he could kneel there and eat like a pig, and so he did. And the days went by, and one day the very modern wife called her family to the dinner table, but their little boy didn't come. So the father called to his son, Tommy, what are you doing? It's time for dinner. Tommy came in with something he had made out of wood. Look, Dad, he said, I am making a trough to feed you and Mama out of when I get big. I'm making a trough to feed you and Mama out of when I get big. The husband and wife looked at each other, eyes filled with tears, and without a word, they went over to the old man, lifted him to his feet, led him to the table, and let him sit down and eat. Didn't seem to matter anymore how much clinking he made with his silverware or how much he spilled. We are losing the value of our parents and our older people in our country, and it will come back to haunt us. In Exodus, the 20th chapter, in verse 12, this is the reading of the Ten Commandments. There is something that's said about the 12th verse. It's the first commandment with promise. First commandment with promise. There are a lot of commandments before that speak about thou shalt do this, thou shalt keep the day for God, thou shalt do all, not take his name in vain, so on and so forth. And some of them have some negative connotations that if you don't, things bad are going to happen to you. But this is the first this is the first commandment that comes with a promise of good things if you keep it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And in fact, it's not the commandment with first commandment with promise, it's the first commandment with two promises. If you go over to Deuteronomy, the 5th chapter, and verse 16, it's reiterated and it says, honor thy father and thy mother as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Many, many years ago, in our country's history, there was a young man who had dreamed since he was a little boy of being a sailor, of someday commanding his own ship and maybe rising to be an admiral. He dreamed and played with boats and did all kinds of things, and one day when he was 16, he joined the Navy. His mother went down with him to the shores where he was boarding the boat, put all his stuff on the boat, came back to talk to his mother, and she said, I just can't help but tell you, this doesn't feel right. There's something wrong. This doesn't feel right. And so the young man at 16, with all of his friends going, with all the peer pressure, went down and gathered up his stuff from the boat and came back and said he couldn't sail off and break his mother's heart. That same man not only became an admiral, but a commander of the Marines, a commander of the Army, a commander of all the armed forces of the United States. His name was George Washington. Daniel Webster said, America has furnished to the world the character of Washington. And if our American institutions had done nothing else, that alone would have entitled them to the respect of mankind. Washington had been taught the value of honoring his parents, been taught the value of God's word, and he took it seriously. Took it seriously. In Ephesians 6 and 1, Paul tells us that children, and we are all children, I guess I'm impressed with that more and more. We never quit being children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. In our history, we've had many people who didn't think that was appropriate. Most famously, Dr. Spock, who thought that children should be allowed to do whatever they want. Benjamin Spock, very famous book. Children should be allowed to be creative and kind of go their own way with Murray. Very minimal of guidance. Interestingly enough, Dr. Spock, in later life, looked back on his suggestions and on his teachings and said he was an idiot. Said he was wrong. A little late for a lot of people, but nonetheless said he was wrong. In In Hebrews, the 12th chapter, in verse 5, Paul tells the Hebrews, "Ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is it whom the Father chasteneth not?" We are reaping the benefits of Spock. We are reaping the benefits of permissiveness. Because children who do not respect their parents, do not respect their teachers, do not respect law, and end up in trouble. I always wonder about the story in 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, the second chapter. I'd like to read a little bit of that to you. 1 Samuel, the second chapter, beginning with verse 12. And to set the players, Eli is a very famous man. Eli is a very good man. Eli is a very knowledgeable man. Eli is a very godly man. But the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. The priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came, while the flesh was in seething, with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand. He stuck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All of the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh until all the Israelites came thither. And before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. And if any man say unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer him, nay, but thou shalt give it me now, and if not, I will take it by force. Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord, and skipped to 22. Now Eli was very old. Heard all that his sons did unto Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. He said unto them, why do you such things? For I hear of your evil doings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. Not always enough to be godly. It's not always enough to be right. It's not always enough to be knowledgeable. Our children all have the right to make their own decisions, good or bad. Good or bad. Sometimes that can be joyous. Sometimes that can be disappointing. But they have that right. I know who I was talking to the other day during the course of work, but we got to talking about mothers. Who uses your middle name more than your mother? Usually not in a good sense. You know, those middle names, I don't know why we don't make them just something contrary when we name our children's period. Pick a name you just really don't like, you know, so that when you hear that, you really get the emphasis that I'm in trouble. But I was talking to them, And I made mention to the fact that my mom is 84, and I am 60, how old am I? 63, 62, 60, 62. I'm 62. I never know how old I am. Yeah, if I live that long. 62, okay? I'm 62 years old. My mom's 84, but she's still my mother, and she, guess what? She still thinks I'm her kid. At 62 years old, my mother still thinks I'm her kid. She has this kind of notion, although I'm sure I'm worrying on her, she has this kind of notion that maybe I should be and do what she wants me to do. Even at 62. You never quit being your parents' child. Ever. I'm convinced. Ever, ever, ever. There used to be a saying that that's as American as apple pie and motherhood. Maybe we should start changing it a little bit, as American as apple pie, because motherhood in some places has taken a beating. I don't know how much of it's real and how much of it's media. I don't know how significant, but it has some significance. To the point that some ladies would say when they're asked, well, what do you do? You know, there's always that form. I love forms. I got to tell you this. I love forms. That is as sarcastic as you can get. We get FMLA forms so I have to fill these things out so that you don't lose your job if you're sick. Dumbest forms. Page 2 of this form. Okay. Will it be necessary for this person to miss work because of the things that they've got? Or for testing? Yes. Next question. Is this medically necessary? No, I just made it up for fun. I thought it'd be good for them to have a few days off. I don't know who thinks up these things, but they're there. So what were there, a form, and you fill out a form for a mother and you say, what do you do? And it became almost, maybe not so much now, but in the past, you almost felt like you should put something more than mother. Like that wasn't enough. What do you do? I'm a mother. And some people might turn away and think that was rather uninteresting, not very challenging, and go on to somebody else. It has to do with our women's lib movement that we went through, which, by the way, if you go look, and just as a matter of interest to you, about a lot of the women's libbers, Gloria Steinem, Betty Frieder, several of those people have changed from women's lib to I do. Lots and lots and lots of them, when their clock got too far along, said oops, and they went back to marriage and what it entails. Anyway, that's a sidelight. I wanted to look at Exodus, the second chapter. There went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi, and her name happened to be Jochebed, in case you're interested. The woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months, because we know the Egyptians were killing the Jewish babies because there were just too many of them. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch, and put the child therein, and laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. When she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept, and she had compassion on him, and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And a woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, because I drew him out of the water. First of all, this may be one of the few times a woman ever got paid to nurse her own baby. Okay? She got paid to nurse her own baby. That's working things right. But what I want you to think about is where Moses ended up. Moses ended up as the leader of the entire Israelitish nation. The man who was picked by God to bring this entire nation out of captivity. I want you to think how strong an influence this Jochebed, his mother, had on Moses. Now, it's one thing to just have someone in your home and bring them up so that they share your values and your thoughts and your purposes. It's quite another to grow up in the middle of the whole teeming mess that was Pharaoh's house. where killing one another to attain the throne was commonplace, where Pharaoh himself was God, where the magicians actually came in and entertained and actually were able to do quite stunning things. Remember? Throw a stick down, it turned into a snake. We're able to do amazing things. And in the middle of all of that stuff, when this boy is being raised as a chosen one of Egypt, in Pharaoh's very family, so that when he walked through the streets, people dropped to their knees. That happened to Moses. There says in the Bible that we know it happened to Moses. He was Pharaoh's daughter's child. When he walked through the streets, he was a god. And despite all that, because of this mother's influence, he maintained the principles and the ideas and the vision to become God's deliverer of his people. Now, what kind of a dramatic woman is that? What kind of a dramatic woman is that? Going back in our history one more time, several years ago, there was a lady who had a young son. Every day, she made it her practice to put the son on her lap and read to him from the Bible, talk to him about Bible principles and what God expected of a godly man. Unfortunately, she died when this youngster was 9 years old. But he grew up remembering all that stuff. And at one time, it was said of him that he was the most honest lawyer west or east of China. Most honest lawyer east of China. And his son said that all that I am, all that I hope to be, I owe to my angel mother, blessings on her memory. And her name is Nancy Hanks Lincoln. Mothers have an impact. And they've always had an impact. And we mustn't decrease it and devalue it. Theodore Roosevelt said on a speech on Mother's Day one time, "Mothers are the most precious asset of any nation, more important than statesmen, businessmen, or anyone else." So when mothers, when you're asked what you do, you say, "I rule the world. I rule the world," because you do. And then I wanted to go on to honoring your father and your mother. You know, I went to my topical and I looked up God. You always wonder how they choose what to put under that category in a topical. But I looked up God and had all the various titles that God is called. I only found one that man could ever share in. It's Father. Father. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it doesn't take a lot of smarts to be a father. Doesn't take a lot of smarts. Enrico Caruso said this, and is astonishingly stupid. This is why it's recorded. He was asked, "What's it like to be a father and have a baby?" His wife had just had their first child. He said, "Oh, having a baby is very simple. There's really nothing to it. We, of course, watch what we eat for the past few months. We're careful with our diet. Then the other day, there were some pangs. So I called the hospital. We went to the hospital. And then shortly after that, the baby came. I can assure you there was nothing to it." Unfortunately, that's true. Unfortunately, that's true. It's very, very easy to be a father. I have said for years in my practice, there's three things I would change if God ever asked me of things to change, if he ever does his experiment over. One, you should have something in your arm to get blood out of that's a lot easier than what it is. Two, you should have your taste buds so they shut off when you've eaten enough and start tasting like cardboard. That would take a lot of temptation away from a lot of us that don't know when to quit eating. And a third is the most important for society. You should have to do something just semi-intelligent, not very smart, just semi-intelligent 3 days in a row to get pregnant. because it really doesn't involve semi-intelligence. Very, very easy to become a father. Very, very easy. And I've often wondered about this tenor that said this. If he thought this was so easy, you know, this is just my peculiar viewpoint. I see men who literally come in thinking they're dying with kidney stones. Okay? With kidney stones. They're passing a rock about that big around. Guys, just think about a head that's that big around. Then tell me this is nothing. Okay? This is nothing. It's easy to become a father, but it's difficult to become a godly father because we both have to be godly and we have to be there to be a godly father. I want to look at a story that I don't know that I've seen used this way before. In Matthew, the 9th chapter. Nope, it's not Matthew. I was looking earlier and I thought, oh, got the wrong scripture written down. There's nothing worse when you get up here and have the wrong scripture. It's Mark, the 9th chapter. Beginning with verse 14. Now, I want to set the stage for you here just a little bit by another story that appears over in Acts. You remember the story where the young man was cured of blindness, and then he proclaimed that he believed, was that in Acts? I think that was in Acts, wasn't it? I didn't look it up. He proclaimed it was because of Jesus, and the people came and they said, well, no, he was blind. Remember, the blindness was attributed to the sin of the parents or of him, but probably the parents, because he'd been blind from birth. So anything that came along that was odd or not quite right with a young child was because you as a parent had done something wrong. Now put that with this story. And when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, the scribes questioning with them, and straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed and running to him, saluted him, and he asked the scribes, what question ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which have a dumb spirit. Lots of parents have said that. Okay? Not in this context, but. I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, he foameth, he gnasheth with his teeth, and he pineth away. Meaning he convulses. He's having seizures. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. He answered him and saith, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, fell on the ground, and wallowed foaming. This is disgusting. Wallowed foaming. And he asked his father, how long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, of a child. They've been doing this for years and years and years. This is disgusting in our day and age when we have seizures that we can't get under control. It's disgusting. And oft times it has cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said unto him, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. Straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying to him, thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him. And the spirit cried and rent him sore and came out of him, and he was of one dead, insomuch that many said, he's dead. But Jesus took him up by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. A father will do anything to help their child. Endure public ridicule, because that's what he would have gotten. Why does your child have seizures? What did you and his mother do? Exactly what sin did you commit that you haven't confessed to that caused this? It's your fault. That's not an opinion that's so far removed from even today. You may think that's opinion removed from today, but it isn't. I take care of a I take care of several schizophrenics, unfortunately. But I take care of a schizophrenic, just recently started, who was never accurately taken care of, never sufficiently medicated or anything else, kept in his parents' home for 40 years, kind of quietly hidden away, took great care of him, fed him, made sure he was clothed and bathed, but never took him for medical care because people looked down on people. This didn't go away then. Still here. People look down on people who have that in their family, mental illness, those kinds of things. A father will do whatever, to benefit their child. I don't know what this means, but I got to thinking as you go through the New Testament that the word orphan isn't used. Not very much. The word orphan. O-R-P-H-A-N. Orphan. Someone without parents. Oddly enough, the phrase that's used in the New Testament is fatherless. Fatherless. Why not motherless? Why fatherless? Well, there are probably several reasons, but in that day and age, they were very dependent socioeconomically on their father. But also the father is the one who sets the tone, who manages and cares for the family. And that's why our politicians aren't wrong when they say today that the family is part of the is part of the reason that we have problems. 70% of teenage criminals are from broken families. 70% of teenage murderers had no father in their house. And in fact, the gaying of America is probably due to that as much as anything else. Because a child, when it's born, attaches and bonds with its mother. But about age 2 or 3, a male child will start switching that bond to its father. This is the area where gender is decided. And if there's no father there, guess what? They go back to their mother as males. And so it's been suggested, I happen to believe it, that homosexual men are boys still hunting for their father. Still hunting for their father. Fathers can't be underestimated. Paul, when he's talking to Thessalonians, said in 1 Thessalonians 2:11, he's comparing himself to a father, a good father. As ye know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children. That's how a father acts. All of them, not one of them, all of them. Exhorted, comforted, and charged. Taught, cared for, and looked out for. Establish respect. That's what fathers do. Do you know what the word husband means? Husband. What does husband mean? Husband means housebound. Housebound doesn't mean you're locked in your house. Housebound means he puts a rope around the house and the family that holds it together, protects it, provides for it, takes care of it, nurtures it. He holds it together. That's what fathers do. Honor your father and mother, for this is the first commandment with promise. Did that apply just to them? That applies to us today. If you want to live long and enjoy good, honor your father and your mother. Honor your father and your mother, and you will enjoy not only good things in this life, but good things in the hereafter. Good things in the hereafter. We have a father who cares for us. We have a parent who cares for us enough that he would go through anything to save you. Even give up his only son to save you. You. Not everybody else. You. He cared enough for you to have his son die. And so you always find it interesting when you think of the story of I lost my name. Lot's wife and the story of Abraham asking God how many people he has to find, and he bargains with God to save a city. Well, if I find this many, I say, well, yeah, if you find that many, I say, well, if I went down by half of that, would you still? Yeah, I would. How far would God have gone down to save mankind from their sins? I know the way is narrow that leads to heaven, and there are few that be that find it. But how far would God have gone down if we were bargaining? 10,000 for all the time since Jesus has been here? Would 10,000 have been enough? Yeah, I think God would have given his son for 10,000. But once you start that, would God have given his son for 5,000? 500. 10. You. Think about that sometime. If all else was lost, did God love you enough to give his son? And I think the answer is yes. Yes. So quite literally, Jesus died for you. Now there's a parent. There's a parent to be copied, to be praised. Honor thy father and thy mother. The best way that we can honor our father and mother is to be the people that they foresaw us to be. The best way that we can honor our Father in heaven is to be the people he knew we could be. We offer you that chance. We stand and sing the closing song.